All right. Well, welcome to everyone. And if we could just introduce ourselves for 1 second, that would be great. And Susan,
I'm
would
Susan
you?
Susan Myers. Francis Zabinski.
Maynard Events.
Karen Sisko.
Esther Wooden.
Jerry Engelberg. Juan Graham.
Nancy Engelberg. Tanya Blodner.
Yes. And Mr. Kramer is a person in his own right, but also the father of Adina Sandberg, and that's a great distinction. And welcome you to Memphis. I just wanted to outline our Mensch Institute. We'll be talking about four different topics, as you may have seen in our publicity. How to speak to others, and we'll be focusing primarily on avoiding embarrassing others, being sensitive to others, to wish others well, what it means to really wish the best for everyone. We'll talk about that. Third time, we'll talk about being straight with others as opposed to any deception that might be involved. The fourth time, we'll change the topic a little bit, rather than how to be a mensch, how to be altogether, and that's guarding your life, guarding our health. We'll be talking about trying to stay in good health as much as we can. So let's begin with tonight's topic, which how to speak to others, or speak nicely. Speak nicely. So, there's a concept that we don't want to embarrass someone, we don't want to make anyone feel bad. What causes people to embarrass other people, right? Occasionally, you get embarrassed by someone else. What causes that? Sorry?
Jealousy.
Good. Jealousy. What else?
Thoughtlessness.
Thoughtlessness. Excellent. Thank you. Yes. come on in. Nice to see you. You might want to bring these chairs over here because it's easier to see over here. Thoughtlessness. Not giving enough thought to the matter. What else? Envy. Jealousy. What else? What else causes people not to embarrass others? Make thoughtless comments.
We just don't know any
better. Don't know any better in what sense? Don't know...
You don't care if you're...
Okay. They're just insensitive. Not, they don't care how the other person perceives what you're saying. That's good. All right. So
some people are just nosy and things come across that they just
want to
know your business.
Want to know your business? Okay. Busybodiness. Be careful with that over there. There is another space over here if you'd like. So let's take a look at what are some of the Torah concepts that we can bring to bear in guiding how we speak to others and how we take other people's feelings into consideration. So there's a basic verse, not to afflict man, one person, lo tonu ish dachiv, shouldn't afflict each other. Now, the verses there in Leviticus are talking about monetary matters. You might think it means they shouldn't cheat someone, and that will relate to our third topic. But the rabbi said, no, this phrase, not to afflict, refers to what? To matters of verbal affliction. The verse referred to the Gemara in Bava Metzia and the Midrash, the Talmud in Bava Metzia and the Midrash elsewhere, says that there is an explicit verse in the Torah not to afflict others verbally. Right? People speak of verbal abuse. We're not necessarily even going to go there tonight in terms of verbal abuse, but even just things that might afflict you even in a mild way, makes you feel bad. So if you say something that makes others feel bad, you're afflicting them verbally. You could afflict someone monetarily. This is a verbal affliction. That would be category number one. So I want to look at two cases, and if someone could read case number one for us, and then we'll go back to it at the end based on that source and other sources, see if we can evaluate it. Who would like to read that, please? Tanya.
Your friend accuses you at work of losing an important account.
Of losing, yeah.
I can't see.
Sorry.
Actually, based on information you have, it is actually the accuser who lost the account. Everyone, including the boss, is listening. What do you say?
Okay. So they try to put you on the spot. It's really your fault. What do you say? Yes?
I
mean, now you're embarrassing them, right? They were so gung-ho about it. Hey, Shalom.
I see.
Right. Are you going to embarrass them?
I say it more diplomatically.
Oh.
You can say it
try to be diplomatic. However you say it, you may embarrass them. So what are you going to do? What are you going
to
do?
Tell them you have to speak to them privately.
That's good. Want to speak to them privately. Good. That's very good. That's very good. Right. There's a problem because he made an accusation against you. So we have to consider this case. Let's look at case number two, please. Who else would like to read? Okay. Yeah, there's Esteline, there's some chairs in the other room if you'd like to get one. In the next room, yeah. All right, who'd like to read that for us?
There's a chair right here.
Oh, yeah, we have one more chair right here. Thank you. Who would like to read that? Friend.
The Rebbe asked his students to explain the Gemara. A student who proceeds to explain the Gemara in a very pompous but completely wrong way. Additionally, he insults Rashi in the process. What should the Rebbe say?
Okay. Right. So the student's out of control. The student said something that didn't make any sense. So how does the Rebbe deal with that? Student has, they also have a little bit of an attitude. Yes?
Oh, no, you always make everybody feel good when they say the wrong thing. So you might say, I understand what you're saying. Maybe I'm interpreting it a different way.
Mm-hmm. You could try to steer it in the right direction. What would be lost, though, if you, let's say, you have a very gentle teacher and doesn't challenge the student as far as what he may have said wrong or what, and he tries to finesse it. When we get to some later point, he'll talk about how we should talk about Rashi and talk about what the Gemara really means. But he'll finesse. What is lost by doing that?
The students may think that the other student is right.
Right. What else? That's good. Maybe the student will think that what the other student did was proper and correct. What he said was correct. Right, so there is that. There's a problem of truth. What else? What else is lost if you're very gentle with that student?
You probably won't get it. Right. You're pretty emphatic
about it. Right. And the next time he'll say the same thing. He hasn't really learned anything. So how do you balance trying to teach and trying not to embarrass publicly? Right. So if you're not supposed to embarrass people, then the teacher has an additional responsibility because it's so easy for the student to be wrong and context of the learning new things, and it is in public. There's a whole class there, and it's very easy for other students to gang up, to laugh at other students. So there's a particular challenge in a classroom. So let's take a look at some of the sources that deal with the notion of embarrassing others, and see. And we'll come back to these cases later, see if we can get some insight into what the Torah has to say about it. So who would like to read this for us from Pirkei Avot? Bakasha. Sheldon?
One who whitens, quote-unquote, the face of his fellow in public, even though he has in his hands Torah and mitzvot, he has no portion in the world to come.
Right. Now, what does it mean to whiten someone's face?
Embarrass
them.
The
right. Now, wouldn't you say redden their face?
Well, when somebody blanches, maybe reddens and then... So,
very good. So some rabbis felt that there is a text that reads to redden your face, but ma'adim. But usually we say hamalbin, making lavan, making white. So somehow perhaps it transitions from red to white. But anyway, you have one who embarrasses his fellow in public, even though he has a lot of mitzvahs, right? So portion of the world to come, meaning he can't get into heaven because he may have a lot of the mitzvahs. But he just can't get there because he embarrassed somebody. So the rabbis are clearly saying that's a very, very important thing not to do, embarrass others. Particularly what? Where? Where should you not embarrass others? Publicly. Publicly, right. Now, when we went back to our original source, one should not afflict his fellow. Did it matter if it was public or private? Right? If you afflict someone by saying certain things, it's very hurtful. It doesn't matter if it's public or private. Here, seems to be important that it's public. What's the difference between being embarrassed in public and being embarrassed privately?
In public, in front of other people, that's terrible. It makes you feel very bad.
Particularly bad?
Anybody want to? Can't be undone.
Can't be undone, that's good. What else? What constitutes public? What constitutes public embarrassment? Okay, that's interesting, right? That is an opinion. There's an opinion like that, that just two people, that's you, the speaker, and someone else, that's public, right? Two is a crowd. It's more than one. It's plural. That's public. Another definition we could give for public, that you can't take it back, that it becomes so widespread. How many people does it take to spread a rumor? What number would you throw out for that?
One.
Maybe one. Right?
Ten.
Depends.
Well, one to listen.
Right. Two. One to speaker and listener.
The speaker listen. So some say three. You know, if three people know about something, you kind of establish it. Three is like established. You've established this rumor. Established this word about this person. Other people say ten. Public is ten, right? In Judaism, public ten minyan. You know, so if you talk about public desecration of God's name, it has to be ten people. If you want to sanctify God's name, whether it was Kaddish or by defying the king who tells you to bow down to an idol, it has to be a minyan of people. So it's interesting what constitutes public. In any event, the rabbis made a very extreme statement about it. There are many things in the Talmud where the rabbis say that if you do this, you have no portion in the world to come. On the one hand, the rabbis say that everybody has a portion in the world to come. All Jews, all good people have a portion in the world to come. On the other hand, there are many things in the Talmud that they say you have no portion in the world to come. How do they make it even more emphatic here? They didn't just say that you have no portion in the world to come. What else did they say? Right. They don't always say this. Even though... Sorry?
You can't make it up.
Even though...
Right, yeah, that's interesting. You can never make up for it, maybe.
He is very learned and does many mitzvahs. He still can't.
He still can't. I never thought of it as you can't make it up. It's interesting. I was thinking that even though he has such a great background, that he was such a great teacher and learner and practicer of Torah, there are chairs in the other room. You're welcome to take one. Even though he was such a great scholar and all that, it doesn't matter because he's now ruined everything. But Tanya mentioned something else, that even if from now on you want to try to make up for it, it might be difficult. Of course, that gets into a different question. Can you repent from anything? Can you always repent? But it does seem, may imply that. Yes?
Can he ask for forgiveness? I mean, he has no portion in the world to come. Can he ask for forgiveness?
Well, that gets back to Esteline's point, right? Why can't you ask for forgiveness?
Publicly in front of the exact same number of people, the same people, and they would have
right.
to tell the exact same people that they told, and
that's
pretty difficult.
Right, so we've got lots of... Well, with matters that are in between people, when you offend someone in between people, you have to ask forgiveness from the people, so it's difficult. Let's go on a little bit. Here's another source for the idea of not embarrassing someone, a little different angle. Who would like to read that for us?
Rebuke him. You might not think even if you embarrass him.
Because if you're supposed to rebuke somebody, you figure you should rebuke him no matter what. Even if you embarrass him, so what? You got to rebuke them for God's sake. So the verse says, go ahead.
It teaches, and you should not bear sin.
What is the verse saying? What? It's a very strange verse. You should surely rebuke him. I understand that. And not bear a sin. What does that mean? Right? So he says that you might think you could embarrass him while you're rebuking him. Comes the Torah and says you should not bear sin. In other words,
not at any price.
While you're rebuking, you must
be in private.
You must not embarrass the person while you were rebuking a person. So if someone, right? Now, which case?
That's a lesson for the teacher.
Okay, so which case is that to deal with? Right? We mentioned this case here. Right, the Rebbe is in a quandary with the students. He wants to educate the student. The student said something foolish, perhaps even sinful, in the process of his explanation. Right, so you might say, well, he has to rebuke the student because the student has to be put in his place and he has to be taught his lesson, etc. But on the other hand, we're saying here that what? That even in the context of rebuke, you can't embarrass somebody. So. We have perhaps an answer to that original question. Now, yes.
One of the things that someone mentioned that you should rebuke him strongly.
strongly in that case was that other students might think what he did was okay.
Hmm.
So how do you rebuke him, not embarrass him, and let others know that what he did was not okay?
Yeah, we're going to come back to another case similar to this. Deals with it a little more later. But anyone want to take a shot at that?
You correct them without embarrassing them.
Okay. You just correct the error, but you don't deal with the individual. Right? Sometimes you say, okay, thank you very much. And then you go on and you say something completely different. I will say that in my experience with teachers, all of whom, very holy people, did not find that they were always so careful to not embarrass any student in the class, thereby creating a certain level and a certain awe in the class that, you know, you can't just say anything. You know, if you want to say something at that level, maybe you shouldn't raise your hand. That does not apply here in this class. But I did sense that high yeshiva level classes, sometimes the teachers did embarrass students, and it sort of set a certain tone. But everyone always did have this question in their mind, is this proper? And I think it remains a question. Yes, Barbara.
I think in any kind of classroom, you want to have a certain level of trust that everyone's free to speak. So everybody's contributions are welcome, but it's like you said, you thank someone and then you proceed to tell them stuff.
I had one teacher who said along those lines, he said, someone said something just totally not fitting for the type of thing the teacher was looking for. So that's interesting. Say what? I'm going to explain it now, and we'll see if that fits with what you were saying. Of course, since the teacher was at a very high level and the student wasn't, it was clear that the student's comments were not going to fit. So it was funny, and he was embarrassed. But the concept was the same, that he was saying, "Okay, no comment on that, but I'm going to explain it now my way." All right. So far we've had the idea of not afflicting our fellow, to verbally afflict someone. We have the idea of something in public, embarrassing someone in public, causing them physical anguish that they can visibly be seen to be blushing, etc. Then we had the idea of that within the context of rebuke, even there, you can't embarrass them. What if you're not in the context of rebuke? Can you embarrass them then? What's the answer? Say it stronger.
No.
If you can't embarrass someone when you're trying to fulfill the mitzvah of rebuking them, then can you do it when you're not doing the mitzvah, just on any Tuesday?
Definitely,
by a logical sequence, you can certainly not embarrass them when you're not even trying to fulfill the mitzvah of rebuke, right? You're just talking about the Super Bowl, right? It's not in the context of some mitzvah that you're trying to perform, then you certainly cannot rebuke anyone. No question about it. Okay. Does this only apply in public? Would the rabbis be so adamant about not embarrassing someone if it wasn't in public?
Still.
It's still embarrassing them, right? Or does embarrassment involve public? Is that the whole point? Right? Let's say I asked someone a question he was supposed to know, he thought he was supposed to be a rabbi, he didn't know it. It's just between me and him, right?
Still,
is that still embarrassing?
Still you don't do it.
Right. So most people would say that, well, come on, it doesn't. Don't get too carried away with the words, it says public, but even if it's not public. But other rabbis seem to insist on formulating this in terms of public. Usually when you see Hamalbim Penei Chaveiro, one who whitens the face of his neighbor, of his friend, when you see that expression in Talmudic literature, usually it mentions Barabim in public. Usually. But there are authorities who brought this concept without mentioning the idea of public. So certainly many authorities have the opinion that the in public part is not necessary for embarrassment. Embarrassment can be even without a crowd.
The intention is the same. It doesn't matter where you are. It's the intention is the same, so the sin is the same. What happens afterwards is different. Somebody psychologically might get over it easier if they're alone. They were embarrassed. Mm-hmm. Nobody else witnessed it. Versus public, it might last longer.
Mm-hmm.
But the intention of the person who's doing the embarrassing is the same.
So
the sin should be the same.
What if you didn't mean to embarrass someone? You just you weren't thinking. You were just you were saying something, and I have all ever have that happen to you where you make a pun, you didn't realize it. You make a joke, you didn't realize it, right? And everybody's laughing, right? And all it turns out that you embarrass someone. So is that the crime of embarrassing someone?
I mean, it's still a sin, even though I guess the intention wasn't there, but it's still.
Would you have to ask for forgiveness before Yom Kippur to that person for embarrassing them?
Yes,
right. But right, obviously, is it as bad as the other in terms of your own intent? It's not as bad, right? But in terms of the effect, it's clearly as bad. Let's go on. Then the rabbis go a step further. Before they said that if you whiten someone's face, what happens to you? You can't have a portion in the world to come. Now they say, go a step further. Who would like to read that? Someone didn't have a chance. If anybody can't see, you're welcome to come. There's some room over here. Who would like to read that? Esteline.
One who whitens his friend's face, it is as if he spills blood. Rav Nachman said, we see this
is true.
For the blood rushes from his face and he becomes white.
Right. So, not only is it it's as if he spilled blood, this rabbi, Nachman, one of the rabbis in the Talmud, so he's in Bava Metzia, so he says, yep, that's true, because when a person's killed, what happens to them? They lose blood, and when a person is embarrassed, they lose blood from their face. When blood moves around, we would probably say it moves into their face. It moves around, so it really is true. The rabbi, of course, is somewhat tongue in cheek, but he says it. Now, how seriously should we take this? If we really take this seriously, it's as if you spill blood. Then there's a certain rule that certain things can never be done, right? If even someone puts a gun to your head, you cannot do three things. What are the three things?
Murder, idolatry, and immorality.
That no matter how much pressure you're under, you cannot commit immorality, murder, or idolatry. Are the rabbis saying that embarrassing someone is tantamount to murder? In which case, even if you were under duress, you could still not do it? Would it go that far? It's actually discussed in rabbinic literature, and the different rabbis take different positions on it. It could be that they're serious about this. Most people say, Meiri says, for instance, it's just a melitza, it's just a nice poetic expression that it's as if you spill blood. They don't mean it. It's as if you spill blood. But again, how important the rabbis seem to take it. But here, they're suggesting that the source of the prohibition of not embarrassing someone is something completely new and different. What's the source?
You said it was the Gemara.
No, what is the Gemara's? This is the Gemara. This is the Talmud. What is their source for the idea of not embarrassing someone on this page? What is the root of the idea that you can't embarrass someone? Believe it or not, what they're saying is that the root of the prohibition of embarrassing someone stems from the prohibition of do not murder. Now that seems a little bit far-fetched. You know, murder is murder. Embarrassing someone is embarrassing someone. It may be tantamount to it, or it's very bad, but it's not the same thing. But give me the root of both, which is the same. Yes? Mm-hmm.
And that when you embarrass someone, you take away their ability to continue living in a sort of self-esteem sense, and they can't produce as much, and they won't be able to give of themselves and who they are.
Okay, yeah. So look, for instance, at the rebellion going on in, or whatever you want to call it, a revolution in Egypt. Some of the protesters are saying, we want our dignity. It's embarrassing. We're supposed to be this great civilization, and we are... we have a dictator in 2011. This is embarrassing. We have no dignity. They treat us like servants and slaves. And you see the rage for just being humiliated, right? So there's tremendous rage from that. Anyone else? What's the connection between don't murder? What's the root of that? And what's the root of don't embarrass someone?
And how are the two roots connected? Yes?
I have a question. I'm trying to think it through, but I have a question.
Okay.
Is there a prohibition against embarrassing someone in the Torah itself?
Well, we're claiming that it has a number of different roots, and we mentioned one was don't afflict your neighbor, and we mentioned but it doesn't say the words do not embarrass someone. Right? Thou shalt not embarrass someone. Not stated anywhere explicitly.
We're going to see that,
right, there are narratives that imply that, and we'll get to that. But right now we're saying that it stems from the Torah prohibition of nothing less than do not murder. What's the root of do not murder?
No,
what's the conceptual root? What's the concept?
If someone kills a person, it's as if he killed the world.
Okay, destroy a whole world. Okay, that's good. So do here. Okay, that's good.
Someone takes one life, it's as if he saved the world. So.
But why don't we just say, like some dictators may say, we have 80 million of them anyway, so, couple more, a couple less, it's no big deal. What are we saying? That every person is very valuable. Somehow, when you embarrass someone, what do they feel like? Right? Everybody's laughing, and they're turning red and white and green and everything else. All right? So everybody feels like $1 million, and they feel like dirt. They're low. Right. So it's Perhaps what Mindy's saying, the root of not killing someone is the idea that there is something called human dignity, that there is a right to live, a right of dignity, a right of a person to hold their head up high, and embarrassment is robbing them of that dignity. It both stems from it's a compromise on the image of God, the dignity of a human being. Both murder and embarrassment, it stems from that. Very different, but it stems from that. Again, how seriously did we take this? How far did the rabbis think that the two are related is an interesting question and up to debate. Yes?
What if you do it in a way like, these comedians or whatever, when they have toast and, it's strictly embarrassing to people
Okay. Yeah, we may have some sources that will touch on that. But, right, if it's all meant in good humor, you know it, he knows it, he expects it, we'll have some sources that will touch on that. Please remind me that before we finish.
Rabbi, in the civil rights struggle, the men are carrying signs that say, I am a man.
Yes, right. The sanitation workers who were crushed the day before the strike, week before the strike, they were crushed by by one of the sanitizing compacting machines. There it goes, people die in the call of duty. And the sense that a guy could be paid, $30 a month or something like that, it's similar. It's a lack of human... there's no the value of human life. The value of human life. The dignity of the human being. So based on the above, how many possible sources are there for embarrassing a fellow? And this answers that's Lean's question. Where does the Torah say you can't embarrass? So what have we said so far? There are four possible sources. What are they? Who can remember? What are the four sources? Number one.
Do not afflict your neighbor.
Do not afflict your neighbor. Good. What else? Right? Do not bear the sin in the process of rebuking. And certainly, if you are not in the process of rebuking, you certainly should not embarrass somebody, right? And do not afflict. So let's see if we can do it. Can we do it? So we have one. Do not afflict your neighbor. Two. Don't bear the sin in the process of what do you call it? Three. Okay, we'll get to three in a second. And four was what? Last one we just did. If you embarrass someone, it's as if you spill blood. So let's try that.
Right? It's a type of murder. It's here's a slightly new one. Well, we mentioned bearing the sin for improper rebuke, affliction of words. But here's the other one, a commission within rebuke. It's failure to rebuke properly, right? If it's in the context of rebuke, it isn't always, but in the context of rebuke, and you botch it up, and you rebuke them, plus you embarrass them, you have failed in your mitzvah. It's a diminution in, it's a commission within your rebuke. So, interesting how you could possibly find a fourth source there as well. How do they differ practically? How do they differ practically? Yes?
Well, for example, what you just said, that if you're not rebuking someone, then, and but you embarrass them, then that's not, you're not violating the second one.
Right. It would seem that the case of the rabbi or the teacher is more relevant to the rebuking type of things. And the others are apply in any sort of context. Okay, let's go on. An alternate version, by the way, in the Talmud, one time it appears like this. It doesn't say one who whitens the face, but one who. I'm sorry, it should not say one who does. Take out the word not. This is one who antagonizes the face of his neighbor in. I'm sorry, does not take that out. One who antagonizes his neighbor in public. That's not the matter of. There's another source where it talks about antagonizing. It's really an attack. An embarrassment against someone is like you're attacking them legally, or you're making a legal attack. Maknit is you're starting up, you're fighting with someone. That embarrassing someone is also starting up with them, right? Sometimes passive aggressive people love to embarrass people because they can get in an attack. Without seeming that way. So there's an antagonizing element. We raised the question at the outset, why do people embarrass others? Part of it is sort of a passive-aggressive attack, right? It's an attack. It's lachnit, antagonizing. Sorry?
A feeling of superiority. Or inferiority.
Well, yeah. For a moment. It gives you, for 2 seconds, you have, right.
You feel inferior, but it gives you a boost up.
For a second, yes. Now, here's, if the rabbis hadn't gone overboard already in describing the problems of not rebuking, they go a step further. Who would like to read that for us? Esther? And Susan?
One should rather throw himself into a fiery furnace and not embarrass others.
Okay, so this is the story of Tamar, right? Tamar is found in which book of the Bible?
Rashi.
So Tamar is the daughter-in-law of whom?
Yehuda.
And she's supposed to marry, her husband dies, she has no children. So the mitzvah is that she marry the brother. The brother's no good, he dies. Right? Then there's another brother. So Judah says, well, you know, Er and Onan, they already died. Let me wait until Shelah grows up, or maybe later. You know, as they say, later. Well, this woman can marry my other son later, much later. So in the meantime, she's getting frustrated, she's alone, and she realizes nothing's happening. So she dresses up as a prostitute, and she sleeps with Judah, who somehow falls for her. And then the word gets out, this woman who's supposed to be waiting, a woman in waiting, she's waiting for this husband, for this Shelah to grow up and marry him, she's supposed to be waiting, she's pregnant. She has obviously violated this bond that she has to this would-be sort of semi-engaged person, this zikati boom, they call it, this relationship to this other brother. And she has violated that. She's become pregnant. So they tell Judah she's pregnant. He said, I'm the head of the family. Take her out and she should be burned. In those days, the father was in charge of the family, as some Arab families do this day. The father's in charge. She shamed the family. She's finished. So they go to this woman and they say, "You were officially pronounced that you are going to be burned." And now, what could she say? Well, the one who pronounced the death sentence, he's the one who slept with me. What's going on? And
you have to understand in the context of this story, anyone in the family who would perpetuate the memory of the dead brothers, it would be fine. So it could be Judah, it could be the brothers. In those days, it didn't really matter. So really, Judah had done a mitzvah, not a sin. It's a strange thing. But anyway, so she says, well, do you know who these things belong to? Someone left me his signet. Someone left me his straps, whatever. And who left these two things? So the rabbis say, you see, she could have said, what? That scoundrel, he was going to prostitute. He's the one who did it. It wasn't me. You know, it was not my fault. She could have really embarrassed this father-in-law. Instead, she just said, just ask him if he knows who this belongs to. They bring it and say, you know who this ring belongs to? Oh, it belongs to me. Okay. Matter closed. Okay, everything's fine. There's no problem. She's off the hook. She refused to embarrass him. Now, that was a very dangerous thing, because if she didn't take a strong stand and say, he's a scoundrel, not me, then, because he didn't give me the son in the proper time, therefore, if she didn't take a hard stand, what could happen to her? She could have died. She could have been thrown into a fiery furnace. But she didn't care. She would rather be thrown into the fiery furnace than embarrass someone else. It's a very extreme thing, right? Yes, they're treating her like dirt, and they say she has no dignity. But she's not going to treat him like dirt and embarrass him. That was meant to be. This was meant to be. As a matter of fact, this is how Mashiach is born. From that, the twins that were born, to make up for the death of the two brothers who had died, from those twins, one was Peretz, and David is from Ish ben Partzi. He's from the family of Peretz, and that's how Mashiach is born. So she would not do that.
So now she's a good person. I mean, it's okay. She was the prostitute, and all, but just because she didn't embarrass her, now that makes her.
The prostitution was okay because she was just trying to seduce her father-in-law, who in this case could perform the mitzvah of marrying the widow. So she was simply making a family member do the mitzvah of taking her in. And he may have thought he was doing something wrong, but it turned out that he was doing something right. So everyone seems to come out okay. For modern sensibilities, it's a strange story. But the main point here is that nothing can...
And think that she had planned it that way back before it all began by asking for the tokens to show that it was
right. Good. Well, you could say that was just business as usual. You know, he couldn't give a payment, so he gave her that, and he was supposed to send the payment. He was supposed to send a goat or something, right? So, but yes, she did set it up so that she could claim it without embarrassing, perhaps. Okay, now you could take the story a different way. You could say she did embarrass him. Why do you think she had these things? But anyway, that's how the rabbis take it. The most important thing is how the rabbis took it, that you have to go to great lengths not to embarrass someone else. Okay. Is it really one of the things you would rather die rather than violate? It's a matter of debate, as we mentioned. Okay, now warning. This is a shocking source, so, you know, I don't want to leave now or something like that. Who would like to read that for us? Don't worry, and be careful, it could be embarrassing. But, anybody? Okay.
A person should rather have relations with a possible married woman and not wipe in the face of his friend in public.
Okay, that's very bizarre. This is the story. We all know the story of David and his wife, whose name is Bathsheba. What's the story? Right. She was married to another man. The rabbis say that she wasn't really married to him. The man she was married to, he was a man of war. So he would always so he could be lost in war, like Gilad Shalit or like my friend Zachary Baumel. So therefore, he would always divorce his wife conditionally before he left. And then, if he came back, he would remarry or he'd rip up the get or something like that. So, as far as David was concerned, he did not marry a married woman. He did not steal a married woman. He took a woman who was divorced. But it looked like she was married, and maybe she was married. And it's now. So David turns to God in this midrashic, Talmudic passage. a Gadic passage, and God, David turns to God, he says, I'm always being embarrassed. I suffer all the time. I've suffered for my sins. He says, anytime we're studying, the rabbis envision David is sitting around studying all the time, and he's studying Mishnah, and they're having nothing to do with wives or adultery or anything. And the students will always say, by the way, King, what's the rule if someone steals someone else's wife? And he says, all right, I know. It's a death penalty. But by the way, who would like to read the story? Who would like to read the story? This is not so embarrassing. Susan, did you have a chance? Go ahead. Even.
Even when David was studying
Nega'im and O'alot, those are very obtuse parts of Talmud, of Mishnah.
They would ask him, what is the law of one who slept with a married woman? And he would answer,
His death is with choking. They would use their four methods of execution. One of them was choking. That's the execution. Go ahead.
And he has a portion in the world to come.
But you know, if someone is killed, that's their atonement. If a person is executed, that's their atonement, and then they can have a portion in the world to come. Go ahead.
But one who embarrasses his friend in public has no portion.
Right. Good comeback. You see. Now, is he embarrassing the student? Is he embarrassing the other student? Possibly.
Yes.
Right. But the point is that so the rabbis say that what? That what he did was, that was one thing, but it's even worse to embarrass someone in public. This is very different, right? Right. Let's say we think someone committed adultery, so we want to shame them in public for their behavior. We want to rebuke them in some way. And the passage here is saying, wait a second, embarrassing someone in public, that could be even worse. Now, it could be it's different because David repented. He's not just, right, it's only a doubtful wife. She was not really married. And David repented afterwards. So maybe it's different. But the rabbis make a blanket statement that we don't whiten the face of someone in public. Whatever sin a person could commit, before we said no matter how many mitzvahs you have, nothing can atone for embarrassing someone. Now we're saying that no matter what sin a person committed, it's not as bad as embarrassing someone. That is the worst.
What would the rabbis think of that? What's the scarlet letter?
Right. In other words, the scarlet letter, the idea that the person should be ashamed for the rest of their life, right? And here the passage is saying, how dare you? You were shaming someone? That's the worst. Now, the executing is different. Right? If someone committed something that needs to be executed, you execute them. That's a different story. But as far as embarrassing, that could be something else.
Will you accuse only of an inanimate object, like when we come to the challah, not to embarrass it when we...
Right. Very good. Very good. Very good to bring into this discussion that the rabbis say that why do we cover the challah? One reason is because the challah is embarrassed. We're starting off with the kiddush, but we should start off with the motzi. So it's so embarrassed, so we cover it up. Shouldn't be embarrassed. To teach us that if inanimate objects shouldn't be embarrassed, certainly people should. We should not embarrass people. Okay. The Talmud, the Mishnah, and the Gemara subsequently together, codified by the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam, the Maimonides, they give examples of not embarrassing someone. I'd like us to find the common denominator of all these cases, and this will get us to a very key point about not embarrassing others. Who would like to read that for us? I'll help you out with the parts that are covered. Who would like to read it? Tanya.
Examples of not embarrassing
someone. Okay. If his friend.
If his friend is a Baal Teshuvah, do not say to him, remember your
early
deeds. If he sees affliction overcoming him, don't say what Job's friend said. Who can be clean and lost? And if a question arises, don't ask one who can't answer.
Okay, so we have how many cases? Three. Case number one, right? You don't want to remind someone of their past misdeeds. Now, there are other, I didn't give you all the cases, that could apply to a Baal Teshuva, someone repenting, could apply to a convert, not to mention, you know, you used to do this. Right. Number two, what does that mean? It's a little bit more difficult.
Someone suffers.
If someone's suffering, so Job's friends, right? One, they said a lot of things. It's like, you know, 40 chapters of things that they said. But some of the, so one of the things they said to him was, right? Who can be clean? Something nakiv avad, that if someone is clean and they're destroyed by God, how can it be? It can't be that someone is clean. There must be. There must be a reason why they're being lost or wasted or destroyed by God. They must have. Sorry. You can turn it. You can probably turn it off for a second if you want. You just switch off. Yeah. So it might not do anything. But anyway, I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so. So if someone's suffering from affliction, don't say to them, you know, let me explain it to you. It's really because of your sins. If you didn't have so many sins, you wouldn't be suffering. And finally, what's the last verbal affliction? That they're not embarrassing someone? What is it? Right? You know the rabbi doesn't know anything about subject X, and you ask him about it, right? So don't ask. As a matter of fact, they say, don't ask him a sukkah question during Pesach. And a Pesach question during Sukkot, he's not studying that these days. So, right? Now, there are great towering giants. You can ask him anything, anytime. But that's certain types. But for most people, there are seasons for asking. They say 30 days before Pesach, it's appropriate to ask Pesach questions. You're supposed to know that stuff during that time. Okay. What do these things have in common? Pay attention. So let's take that a step further. You're supposed to pay attention. In all three cases, the person who's talking is not only not paying attention to the person they're talking to. What else are they doing?
They're diminishing that person's character and diminishing his feelings.
In what realm? What did the person choose to pick at? Focusing on the people's absences and lacks. Give me another word. What are you... Deficiencies? Weaknesses? I'll give you another word that I heard from Saul Berman. Vulnerabilities. You capture... You what's the word? You... Not captivate. Not to... You... You're trying to take advantage. Another word for take advantage. You're trying to take advantage of their vulnerabilities. You're actually... What? Sorry? Sorry? Something like that. It's almost either person's kind of oblivious, like we talked about before. Well, I'm not thinking about it. You know, I just asked that question. I wasn't thinking that maybe the rabbi didn't know anything about that topic. You know? That's one possibility. Or you specifically knew that he's a Baal Tshuva, and you specifically said, you know, oh, the cheeseburger. How's the cheeseburger? Is it good? Tell me if it's any good. You specifically knew that he's suffering, right? Now, here's the second one is trickier, right? You might say, "Well, I'm just trying to be pious, trying to defend God." He's saying that he's asking, "Where is God?" And I'm trying to defend God, and I'm telling him that. What do you mean, where is God? You must have sinned. That's why you're suffering. What's the problem?
Judging him.
What else? In terms of what we said before, what violation is he falling into?
Rebuke.
Right, you're trying to rebuke him. You're trying to set him straight in the theological realm, right? In the meantime, in the process, what?
He's hurting already.
He's hurting, and one might argue that he's particularly vulnerable because that he may be thinking that, right?
Yeah.
Right. He may be thinking, today, I don't know... Depends on which context. Maybe some people are so impervious to God and spirituality. Maybe people aren't even thinking about it. But in a more pious context, or even today, if someone's very pious, they may be thinking that, and you know that, and you specifically go after that. So there's embarrassing, and the rabbis are saying this. There's a particular type of embarrassing that's even deeper. So when we talk about, let's say, you're in the classroom and everyone says something, someone says something funny and everyone starts laughing and one person starts blushing. I think one of the questions as to whether it would be tantamount to what the rabbis really defined as embarrassment, which the rabbis said is one of the worst things that it could ever be, one of the questions would be, is this embarrassing, finish the sentence, is this embarrassing, is this embarrassment something which cuts to the core of their own vulnerabilities? Right? Sometimes, right, my brothers, I'm the youngest one in the family, my brothers sometimes we poke fun, but we all, I have my dignity, I have my place in the family. It's okay for brothers to joke around, and I can handle it because I know where I am. If they catch me on something where I'm vulnerable on, that's when the face turns white and red and green. When it's when you zero in on someone's vulnerabilities, that's, you know it. You know, if you know someone well, you know where you can hurt them. And that's where relations with a husband and wife become very, very delicate, because who knows the vulnerabilities of a person best? The husband and the wife. The rabbis actually say that the embarrassment and not afflicting someone is particularly true of a husband toward a wife. Could think this is sexist, I don't know, maybe it still very much applies. They feel that the woman's tears are very much available, meaning the woman is vulnerable to tears. Yeah, I don't know. But anyone, whether you want to get into that exact case or not, anyone who is vulnerable to tears in a particular area, you have to be particularly careful about that. So that's perhaps the essence of embarrassing someone, is exposing their ultimate vulnerability and then making them lose all self-worth such that you've almost killed them. When we talked about some of the things that you might embarrass someone for, is what's the most embarrassing? Is the embarrassing thing what it wasn't, what there was in the past, or what you're doing now? You would think that would be, yeah, so what, they gave examples of, remember what you used to do. But where's the vulnerability there? You're not vulnerable to that. I've been a convert for 20 years. I'm not vulnerable. Yes?
Maybe when you're doing something now, to a certain degree, you're less embarrassed about it because it's present and obvious to people. So it's not like something you want to hide. If you would want to hide, I mean, I guess it could go both ways, but if you want to hide it bad enough, then you stop doing it. If it was that repulsive to you, the action that you were doing now, wouldn't do it. So what you did in the past is very repulsive to you, and you're embarrassed about the fact that you did it.
Still has an impact on you now, is it?
You can't undo it.
I didn't.
Present action, I think.
Could you explain? Yeah.
If it's present action, then if it's embarrassing to you, then you can stop it. You won't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
If it's past action,
right, it's a vulnerability because it's something you, right, it's part of your background. And the rabbis say you should never curse an Aramean in front of an Aramean, even for 10 generations. I mean, he converted 10 generations ago, and you have a little joke about the Aramean jokes, you know, some of those. And you make one of those jokes, you can still offend them after 10 generations. So he's still vulnerable because it's something, it's in his background, and he can't change it. It's part of who you are. That's why everyone's so sensitive to Semitic jokes, jokes against racial jokes, because it's essentially who we are. We can't. It's a vulnerability. It's something we can't change. Would we want to? That's good. So there are examples. Sometimes they give examples. There are other examples aside from these that are mentioned. One of them is, how could you be so holy now? You used to be like that, and then you're really cutting into his vulnerability as who he is now, not just saying to him, you know, you used to do this. Well, maybe he could be impervious to that comment because he feels he's a different person now. But when you say to him, how can you be so holy now? You used to do this. Then you're questioning what he is right now, and that could be even more hurtful. But they're both hurtful. So you say, why is that embarrassing? Shouldn't the convert be... or the Baal Tshuva would be proud about overcoming the past.
Because
because you're saying he didn't overcome it.
Ah. Maybe there's an implication that there's still something left over from then. Could be. What if someone wants to have a banquet dinner to honor this person because they used to be like this and now they're like that? And you're not trying to embarrass them, you're trying to build them up. What do you think?
No. No. Just puts them in a bad light.
Just forget.
Anybody feel differently? You think you can't picture a key river organization doing this? Say, last year this child was...
Right.
But then people aren't
always so
dangerous.
What was that, Esme? Yeah, so, anyway, we have to be careful. Sorry? Oh, it's up to them. Could it be up to them? Yeah. Someone was asked this question, a modern rabbi was asked this question. Can you say, who is that guy? Oh, he's Baal Tshuva. Right. Who is that fellow? Oh, he converted 20 years ago. So, so if it's sort of nonchalant, it doesn't make it. You want to know, like, where are they from? You start asking, oh, well, is he from Brooklyn or is he from, you know, Muncie? He's like, no, he's a convert. Oh, okay, sorry. So, you were just asking, just a busybody. But if you want to know, I want to marry, maybe we should, he seems like a nice boy, maybe it'd be good for my granddaughter. And you say, he's a convert, so...
Code word.
Right, it's... maybe there are times when these words are meant to be hurtful, and there are times when it's sort of nonchalant and it's not. So it depends if it could be a hurtful context. And one of the rabbis I was reading, he implies that, that you don't need to tell someone on the first date or before their parents are trying to arrange a marriage or something, what exactly the status of somebody used to be 20 years ago. So... Any event, yes.
In keeping with this, then, and I've read so much about it, and I was going to ask you too, so about this Gabby Giffords.
Mm-hmm. Ah, the Gabby Giffords. Mm-hmm.
In being praised for her being Jewish.
Identifying with
it.
What's your question?
Should we be proud of her?
It gets into a lot of different issues. A lot of different issues. But let's see if we can bring it back here. I would say. Right, why does a newspaper, if it was a Jewish newspaper, would you write she was Jewish, or would you write, well, let's assume that there are no issues of what kind of conversion or whatever, but should you write in a newspaper article, this person who is a convert? Is that, right, so the idea that I was reading in one rabbi, at least, is it's not meant to be hurtful, it's fine, but one might disagree that it's a gratuitous comment about her vulnerability. Okay. Is there ever an exception? It's very important before we conclude. Is there ever an exception to this idea of not embarrassing somebody? So, the Nimuke Yosef, one of the Sephardic rabbis in the Middle Ages, he comments on the Rif, for those who are familiar with the Rif. He says, if one does not honor himself, you can afflict him. So what does that mean? He didn't honor himself? So, right, let's say someone disgraces himself. So that he's implying perhaps you could disgrace someone who disgraced himself. One of the rabbis, so this is actually brought in the code of Jewish law. This Nimuke Yosef is brought by the Rama, or Moshe Issel is in the code of Jewish law. And the Sama commentary on the Shulchan Aruch says, if he treats himself with no respect, he's not your brother in Derech Eretz and civilization. In other words, the assumption is this person has dignity. And you're stealing it from him. If the person has no dignity, perhaps these rules don't apply. You're not crushing their dignity. Yes.
Also, maybe I think when a person is behaving with no dignity, when you, if you would embarrass them, it might awaken them to the fact that they are have lost their dignity, and it might inspire them to try to regain it.
Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, the Talmud in Megillah says exactly that. The Vilna Gaon, the Gaon Rabbi Eliyahu of Vilna, cites the passage in Megillah regarding this Talmudic passage, and says that the Talmud says this man, that man whose reputation, the Visha Misane or something like that, whose reputation is bad, one may disgrace him. So this flies in the face of a little bit of what we said before, that we said something that was against this, but this is one view, that if someone has no dignity, then you really can't make them lose it. So it's interesting, and if a child was really acting up in class in such a way that they really lost all their dignity, perhaps you could continue to take them there. It could be. Could be. Carefully, yes. Some suggest one disgrace himself. He is not a God-fearing person. Now, this gets into our final topic. If he disgraces himself, then he's really not God-fearing. He's not God-fearing, then he's not going back. He's not your brother. A brother is someone like the governor of Alabama said. The governor, a brother is someone who fears God, is part of the God-fearing people. So if he disgraces himself, he doesn't fear God. What does that mean? We'll get into this. We'll come to that. Back to that in a second. We'll come back to that in a second. But finally, just a couple of items. Number one, there are many things the Talmud instituted because of embarrassment. For instance, the reason we don't have viewings at a funeral is not because we're fundamentally opposed to viewing a dead body, contrary to popular belief, but rather because some people die and they don't look so pretty, and they would not be able to have a viewing. And there's a minority of people, especially in the olden days, and especially in certain societies and certain times of history, who people die and their face is black from famine. And you wouldn't want that to be exposed, that they died from famine. It's an embarrassment. They had no food. And therefore, not to embarrass them, all funerals take place in a certain way. And that applies to all the funerals. That's why we get buried in a white box, etc., etc. Yes?
Is that why we're all buried in the linen?
Yes. The same shroud, same everything. Right. People used to spend thousands of dollars on fancy shrouds. No, the chief rabbi got buried in simple shrouds. No one's going to waste money on this. People used to abandon the family because they didn't want to deal with the funeral. So they said, this is getting out of control. But the main reason was they didn't want to embarrass. The poor were embarrassed. So many things have been instituted because of embarrassment. Okay. Now, so that's also their vulnerability. Their vulnerability is that they're so poor. How is this embarrassment different from what came before? Is it the same? So think about that. Yeah, it's not an embarrassment, right? It's not an embarrassment because of their essential identity or their history, right? It's an embarrassment of, practically speaking, they didn't have any food, they were a poor family, right? So this is a different type of embarrassment. It's still an embarrassment. Here's a problem that relates to something someone was talking about before. If you're in a shul and everyone's talking, so do you tell them, you know, be quiet, just stop yelling and stop talking? And you know, how far do you go? And if the Shulchan Aruch says, based on Rabbeinu Yonah, that you should yell at them, but then you're embarrassing them in public, and you in the context of rebuke. So then you have to define what does it mean to scold someone? There are different texts. Listen to this. If the main thing is that the embarrassment was in public, then scolding in public is problematic. The main issue in is the embarrassment, the whitening of the face. It's not so much the public thing. Then as long as it's so embarrassing, it is not so embarrassing when we do so. So if you can somehow, yes, it's in public, but you didn't say, you scoundrel, yeah, you think you're religious. You know, you didn't get too excited. You just said, no, you know, right? So, something like that. So then you gave a bang on the table. So as long as you didn't get too carried away, then you didn't embarrass them that much. Probably didn't work too well anyway. And it's okay. But according to Rashi, that anything in public is problematic, it's a big problem. Yes?
Also, I mean, we might have different standards today, but I think that at least it would seem that Shulchan Aruch believes that if a person is speaking while there may be a lot of praising God, that the person has disgraced himself. You can disgrace him.
Good. So maybe it applies to that law would apply here. Yes?
There was a case recently in a New York synagogue of the rabbi calling out of one of the congregants because he won't give his wife a get.
Mm-hmm.
And his name was told in the whole congregation, saying that nobody should be doing any business with him or have any affiliation with him until he corrects this.
Yeah, that might fall under number three. If he didn't provide for his wife, we scold him and embarrass him. So there is something within marriage that we force certain types of divorces, certain types of things. And so it could be, there it mentions embarrassing. It seems that scolding and embarrassing are two different things. In the case of someone somehow doing violence to their wife in some sort of form or fashion, it could be that the embarrassment is permitted, particularly in that case. So there could be another exception. Yeah, so it could be that they're not, that's another possibility, that maybe when someone does, it disrespects someone else, you can disrespect them. That may be the category.
And what about finances? When there's a problem with somebody financially, are you allowed to call them out or let it be known publicly? Is that...
Yeah, I think we do need to be sensitive that we're in the context of shuls and schools, and that we not make people who have less feel that that they're somehow lesser for it, or that things call attention to how much they don't have. Yeah, but they have to balance that with the ancient idea of let's honor somebody. Somebody donated something. Let's honor them for it. So we have to balance that. It's very, very tricky. Yom Kippur feel.
Does it have Hillel said, don't do to someone else what you don't want done to you?
Yes. All ethics go back. Yes. So the Radvaz says that. For words of, he says, in general, when you rebuke someone for talking during shul, it has to be done without real scolding, because the word, there's a divrei chachamim benachat nishmaim. There's a verse that says the words of the sages, or the wise, are always heard softly. You speak softly. I don't know about what kind of stick you carry, but you rebuke should be done softly. So that's in the context of the shul. So maybe that's the best solution, that you can rebuke them, but still speak softly. So there's a limit to how far you go. There could be another exception, that if someone is, right now, he's doing a sin, sometimes you have to say, oh, stop, right? Because you have to stop it now, that could be an application. Now, tonight in our Mensch Institute, we're really not talking about God. We're talking about people. But I want to connect the two for one moment. With that, we'll conclude. If you embarrass others, how is your spiritual life doing?
Not good.
Well, obviously from tonight's discussion, obviously it's a terrible sin, but it relates also to God as well. The Tomer Devorah has this whole idea that you are making light of His wisdom as you make light of the work of His hands. We talked about this in another Mensch Institute, that any diminution of another person is an offense against God. All offenses against people are an offense against God, as the Torah says. You know, even if someone is hanged for his criminal activity, he blasphemed against God, so we kill him with one of the four methods of execution, and then we hang him. So he says, don't let him hang overnight, because he has to be buried right away, because it's a disgrace to God. Disgrace to God? He's a disgrace to God. No. A dead, sinning, blaspheming person is, if you disgrace him, it's a disgrace against God. And making light of someone, embarrassing someone, is a disgrace against God. And or another way of looking at it, the honor of man is the honor of God. There's a relation. We're in the image of God, so that if we treating people shabbily, it's a reflection of our lack of regard for God. You don't recognize that God in God, the relationship of human being and God, either in one of these two ways. So back to the top case, right? Everyone, including the boss, is listening. What do you say? What would you say? Okay, good. Private is good. Also, benachat could be done, perhaps softly. But based on the Tamar story, better you should suffer than embarrass someone else. Take it, don't give it. Okay. And the Rebbe case? The Rebbe case, we talked about that even in the case of rebuke, need to be soft, unless the person has disgraced himself. If in insulting Rashi, perhaps he disgraced himself, or if there was something he did that disgraced himself, perhaps that could be different. So that's our discussion for tonight. Any questions or comments, I would take them for a couple minutes.
I just want to comment.
Yes.
On the way that when people begin to talk in the synagogue, you don't mention you just stop talking.
I try not to. I try not to look at people.
Directed to, they know.
Right.
I like the way that the children wear uniforms to school because I think that eliminates a great deal of competition.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's true. Yeah, because kids are so vulnerable because it's not their fault, right? One day they may be millionaires or the other person could be poor. It's not a reflection on them. So why should one kid lord over the other and whether they feel bad? When it's really not a reflection of them at all. It's a reflection of the families, the background.
I would think it'd be difficult now, though, for all the kids being bar mitzvahed, but now there's so many elaborate vendors that can't.
Yes. That's really incumbent on the community. Right. It's incumbent on the community, and I think very often communities do step up and make sure that those who can't, that they, everyone chip in and join together or help out with the kiddush or... To make sure that it is even as possible. That's true. I was learning the laws of tzedakah. It says day machsoro. You should try to provide for someone up to their what they need. So they said if a man was used to being rich and now he's poor, the community, if they can, you try to get him a chariot because he was used to riding on a chariot. So certainly a bar mitzvah, a kid that he should. But on the other hand, if a child doesn't have and he learns to hold his head high and have his own dignity and get through it, you can overcome these embarrassments. Any other comments or questions?
Not so black and white here. There's still a lot of exceptions that you have to think about with this embarrassment that makes it a little more difficult.
Yeah, we walked away that there could be some cases of. Where there may be some exceptions, where the other person embarrassed themselves, where it's a disgrace against God. So we had a few possible exceptions. Anybody else? All right, well, thank you all for joining us, and join us again next week. Thank you.